I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Balmy with you guys here on Overtime. Coming up in 60 minutes. Get a grip, as we usually do at 9 o'clock. But we're still talking Browns and continuing some of the conversations on the quarterbacks. Obviously, I would say, I don't know. I was going to say a majority of the narrative has been positive surrounding the quarterbacks, and I feel like that's true. There's also been a narrative that we're going to talk about coming up here at 8:20 that maybe the quarterbacks are just bad. They both look bad. That we're going to have to dig into whether or not you actually believe it. But I would say the majority of everything we've walked away from has been relatively positive, right? You've gotten battles.
I've heard nothing that makes me feel like, oh my God, disaster's coming. Like, remember a couple years ago when a lot of the guys were like, man, this offense looks really rough. We were like, that can't be that bad, right?
I mean, even last year, right? Like, we had, Daryl was certainly on top of it, said Dylan Gabriel looked like trash, said the offense didn't look all that organized. Obviously, Shador wasn't getting an opportunity at that point. And I mean, you were right if you had that expectation. The team couldn't even go out there and average 20 points a game, and they were actually significantly farther below that. So I would say fair critique. And I'm not getting that right now. Like, I am getting some, right, and I do think, too, even with our local reporters, who I think do a very good job, you still have to take a lot with a grain of salt. There are going to be reporters who are just never going to admit that a Browns practice looks good until it shows the product on the field. There are also going to be, I've labeled Coach Riz as an optimist, right? I'm not afraid to say that. Me and Coach Riz are friends. I say that directly to his face. I think he's an optimist. He's usually more positive than the rest of the group as well, for both, you know, sometimes absolutely in his right, and sometimes Dylan Gabriel, Coach Riz will from time to time be proven wrong. But he's an optimist. So, again, there is biased reporting that is the reality of the situation when you talk about how good a practice looks. And ultimately, we're talking about how good a practice looks. And it is mini camp right now. But I think a majority of this conversation has been positive.
I think the summertime, especially for football, it's just a time to be optimistic. You know, there's not a lot of hitting, so there's not a lot of resistance in that way. And you can always revert back to, hey, they were just working on something. You know, there's always a reason why you can not have to be so negative, and you can just be on the half glass full side of things. So I think until we get to training camp, I don't really think we have any reason to really be like down in the dumps outside of past performance that just colors how we view the future.
Yeah, like I don't think there's, if you're sitting out here projecting a 2-win Brown season and it's June, I mean, listen, if that's the way you feel, that's the way you feel. But I would tell you to be optimistic. Watch them play 3 games and then go, yeah, this team's not winning more than 2 games. But stand on your ground if you really believe it. But again, like even the individuals, like I don't even think you have to be positive in the team overall result this year to be positive in what the Browns are building. I mean, there's a ton of young players in this building. A lot of young players are looking good, especially the guys who are actually looking at it this time of the year, right? The quarterbacks, the wide receivers, some of the running back work. But you're obviously not defining anything in the trenches. I mean, we saw the Mike Hall block Shador Sanders pass. One, bad pass by Shador. No defending that. That one was ugly. Same way Deshaun's interception was ugly. You just look at that one and go, ooh, yikes. Erase that one from the memory, hopefully, and hope that doesn't come back out. But like, that is the equivalent. Mike Hall literally had 2 guys in front of him. It's like, you know, I'm just going to stop and hold my arm in the air. Like, that's what you get out of the trenches this time of year.
A name we didn't hear a whole bunch is Mike Hall. I hope he can stay healthy. I know we talk about a lot of about the quarterback. But, you know, we did lose a future Hall of Famer on that other side of the ball. And the fact that there are some younger guys who you invest, a second round pick is not something to be sneezed at. So, I mean, he has to at least come around, because I think that also can color how well we want to keep looking at these most recent drafts from Mr. Berry.
I unfortunately think a lot of people are just going to take that and go, Mike Hall, when was he drafted? Before 2024? Ah, that's the old Barry. That's the old Barry. That was the guy who didn't know. That was the Dee Podesta era Barry. That was the guy who had no clue.
He would have took him in the fourth round. You got to trust him here, man.
It's great. It's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, I hope Mike Hall comes around. But Andrew Barry, who was actually on the station earlier today, did talk a little bit about the quarterbacks on the other side, Shador Sanders, and highlighted a lot of what Todd Monken had to say as well, which is a progress from the young quarterback this offseason.
I think he's had an excellent spring. I mean, the past 8 to 10 weeks, you know, as a rookie player and particularly a quarterback, you learn a lot your first year, and especially if you don't start a full season. And I think he did a phenomenal job this offseason. That really started in January and February. And then certainly as we got into having, you know, real practices in May, his growth has been tremendous.
And this is the part that I have to kind of dive into, because what does growth for Shador actually look like? Like, what is the difference? What is the cleanup that he has that you go from one season of football to the next and you think realistic growth is? Because obviously we can talk about cutting down on the interceptions. Shador had more interceptions than he did touchdowns in the 7 games that he played last year. And he had some horrendous games, but like, cutting down on the interceptions is not a... You don't look at a quarterback and go, oh, he's much better because he stopped turning the ball over. Like, no, there's something that happens that causes you to stop turning the ball over. Either you've better learned how to identify defenses. I think in Shador's case, a lot of it, we talked, and Coach Riz has hit on this a lot. We've talked about it a lot as a whole. The Browns have talked about it. His footwork appears to be dramatically improved from where it was a year ago. Especially, like, I'm talking a full year ago. It improved as the season went on, even from, I think, the first time he got thrust into the mix against the Ravens all the way up until the very last week of the season. I thought his footwork looked a lot better. And even now, I think it's taken a massive leap that can help him a ton. And part of that is understanding the defenses and what you're looking at a little bit more. But if we're talking about product on the field, like, I think when we talk about really either of the two quarterbacks, but Shador in particular here, progress ends up being just you showing me that you're a more consistent quarterback. Because we saw great games out of Shador. We saw, I mean, horrendous games out of Shador. That Chicago game is one that I hope that, you know, 2 years from now I don't even ever mention again, because it has so far escaped my mind. Because, I mean, it was one of the worst watches that I've ever had. It was just like, yeah, this game is, I mean, basically in the dumpster as it began. But I think it is just trying to be a more consistent quarterback, trying to, I mean, hammer down a lot of the things, and I think a lot of this comes down to the mental side of the game. I think a lot of this has to deal with, yes, reading defenses, but also understanding when to throw the ball away, understanding what you can and cannot fit your, you know, throw into windows of, and knowing what's happening on the field. Like, these are the areas where I think Shador can make a lot of the progress and take a massive step up from maybe where he was a year ago. Like, it's so hard to go through and I think see what he was capable of last year. Like, I always think back, I was at the Titans game, so I constantly go back to that Titans game, and he looked incredible. He's the best player on the field. Kevin pulls him off the field for a 2-point conversion, and all of us basically lose our minds, because it was like, the guy accounted for 4 touchdowns. Why is he not on the field? Leave him there. But that was like the peak of Shador Sanders for me, against a relatively bad defense. But again, you can't have the same types of highs and lows as frequently. It's a National Football League. You're going to have good games and bad games. You can watch a game where Patrick Mahomes looks like a pumpkin. But at the end of the day, you look at his entire stats over the year and you go, sure, he had a bad game, but he had about 3 good ones to make up for it. I think for Shador, it's more stringing together like a 75-25 mix. Right? Like, I think that's usually what defines a pretty solid quarterback in the NFL, that for every 3 really solid games you have, you'll have a really bad one. I think that's what you're looking at for progress. It is cutting down on the turnovers, but it is being a more consistent quarterback and being more comfortable in the system that you're running, being more in charge of the offense that you're running. Because I think as you were thrust into the season late last year, a lot of where we talk about this progress and making strides probably does have to come from your confidence to play the position, which I don't think Shador lacks, but also just how comfortable you are. I brought it up yesterday on with JP. Where we expected Deshaun to be in the lead, and where I think Shador maybe has closed some of that gap now, has been all of the things that you're responsible as a quarterback other than throw the football, right? It has been recognizing blitzes, setting protections, run pass options, all of the things that don't show up directly in front of your eyes. Is that was a good throw or a bad throw? I expect a veteran of 10 years to be ahead of you in that category. They've done those things. They've had to do those things. Shador last year, Ethan Posick, while he was healthy, was setting the protections for the offensive line. Very common for young quarterbacks not to do that themselves and to leave it to, you know, a more experienced center. But the idea is that veteran quarterbacks do handle that themselves. because they're the ones in charge of it. There's less moving parts. They have everything stored in their brain and don't have to communicate and wait for the center to set the protection, understand what the center's trying to do, and they can understand the entire picture. I think that, at least right now, if we're talking about massive strides that Shador is making, this isn't arm talent.
Daryl has said something multiple times that it may be best for Shador to sit because that just gives him a little more time and we maybe get to get past the roughest part of the schedule. Outside of consistency, it sounds like we're wondering if he could really handle the workload on his plate. We all think that he has a certain amount of level of talent, so it's not a talent issue, but can you actually handle all these things? So, I mean, you may be able to throw the ball on a line 70 yards, but if you can't, like you say, it's set to protection, if you can't get people lined up, if you can't get them out the huddle properly, or you're not adept at really just reading and reacting quicker and putting all those things together in one package, for as much as I don't want that man to start, it might be best to give him 1 to 2 games, especially if we all believe that, hey, man, he's a broken toy. It's not going to work. I think that might be best for him just to give him a smidge more time, especially considering at some point he's going to get a 10 to 12 game runway no matter what it is.
See, this is where you and I disagree. And it was actually a conversation JP and I had yesterday about this idea of sitting Shador. And there's been, Daryl has said it, multiple national media members have talked about it. And actually, Lima and Daryl talked about it this morning as well, because I was on the same page as JP. I don't think it makes sense to sit Shador Sanders, but Lima was clearly on the other side of this.
I obviously disagree, because I've said for the last 2 weeks that I didn't think it was the worst thing in the world if he doesn't win this starting job. Here's all I'm doing. I'm just, in my mind, I'm already going to exactly what the Shador fans are going to say. If he starts the season and struggles, what are their fans going to say? They're all the things that you could totally see happening beforehand, which is, well, the new offensive line. I mean, they threw 5 guys together and just had made it work. Todd Monken's first games as a head coach, he had never done this before. You know, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, this is all new to them. Look at all the young skill position players. They weren't supposed to win right away. If he starts out 1-4,
excuses are built in.
1-5, there's all the excuses. Well, this is what I'm trying to avoid, not hearing from the Shador fans. What I'm trying to avoid is him starting out 1-5, losing the job. And then what does that mean for his career? Well, else is going to give him a shot? What other teams are going to be salivating to add him after he was statistically one of the worst rookies in modern NFL history, yeah, quarterback last year?
Yeah, and I don't
know.
He was
a fifth-round pick that got passed over how many times by the decision-makers in the league. What do you think they're going to do this time?
So, and this is where, and I am very much so, and I like to throw it out there, pro give quarterbacks time to develop. Like, I think Patrick Mahomes sitting here did a great bit of a deal for his development. I think a lot of the times the guys like Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love out in Green Bay sitting behind, especially a very talented quarterback, right? One of the smartest quarterbacks in the game for both of them. Rodgers behind Favre, Love behind Rodgers, helps them develop their game. This is where I don't think it makes a ton of sense for Shador, is that you've already gotten a taste of playing in the league. And if this is to avoid the conversation, to avoid the excuses of it, I'm not going to be the person sitting there making the excuses for Shador anyway. Like, it's put up or shut up time. This is your chance to perform. This is your chance to go out and do it. We can watch you play quarterback, see the other guys on the field not perform the way they're supposed to, and still make an evaluation of it. Last year was impossible. You didn't have a good enough team. You don't get that excuse this year. But what does sitting accomplish this year? And it just quantifies it and grows. The biggest fear that I have walking away from this season is that I still walk away with no answer at quarterback, right? And not that I have an answer of no on Shador, but I have an answer of I don't know on Shador. Give him 17. Like, that's where I want to see the growth. That's where I want to see him on the field, is if you can't do it over a 17-game stretch. And that can be 4 bad games to start the season, right? That can be 4 or 5. You figure it out in the next 12, I'll consider that part of a growing process, but you're going to have to show me something in those 12. What happens if he goes 12, takes 4 games, still doesn't look great, and then plays 8 games that are absolutely incredible? You played half a season that was great. Are we going to chalk that up to Shador can win the starting job? Or are we going to chalk that up to, can I really trust in 8 games? Because I think it's, can I trust in 8 games? That's the part where I don't agree with it. It's a fact-finding mission. Like it or not this year. Like that phrase, don't like that phrase. It's where you're at quarterback. I need to know if he's the real deal. And any time that he's not on the field is time that's being wasted of finding that answer. 216-474-0092. What does progress from year one look like for Shedeur Sanders? We're going to get into what one insider had to say about Shador's progress and what he needs to improve on, and whether or not you're buying the bad, both quarterbacks look bad narrative. All coming your way here in about 5 minutes in overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Cavs Conversation.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Graybar, we know your time is money. That's why our services go beyond parts and products. With kitting, pre-assembly, wire carts, and Graybar smart reels that keep you moving. We stage materials and manage logistics so you can spend less time sorting and more time installing. And with locations nationwide, we deliver when and where you need it, working to make your job easier every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
T-Mobile has an exclusive bundle for customers 55 and up.
I'm Sarah Bowl.
Yeah, I'm Frank Bowl.
A reliable network is key for us. And with T-Mobile, it's been wonderful. And going to the 55 plus plan saved us so much money.
A lot.
And that's important. Trying to keep costs down. The home internet's been perfect. It's fast. It's quick. The setup was so easy. It took less than 15 minutes.
It was like, ta-da! If you want simplicity, coverage, reliability, you want the whole package, T-Mobile has it.
Right now, T-Mobile customers 55 and up can get two phone lines on America's best network, plus America's fastest 5G home internet for just $30 each.
$30 per month each line with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Minimum age 55. Pricing for home internet rely on 2 lines of Essentials Choice 55. $35 connection charge per line required. Best mobile network and fastest 5G home internet based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved.
Station coming your way at 8:40. Giannis could be on the move, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be to the Cavs. That could still dramatically impact the Cavs and the decisions they make this offseason. Again, we're going to get into that coming up here in about 15 minutes because we're still talking a little bit on Browns quarterbacks, and we're asking you at 216-474-0092, what does progress from year one look like for Shedeur? Right, I think everybody kind of takes a swing at this. Andrew Berry, we listened to last segment, he talked about what that progress could potentially look like and some of the things that he's been working on, the fact that he's taken strides. Mike Florio, though, on Pro Football Talk, took a little bit more of a swing of what Shedeur does well and what he does need to work on coming into this season. And, well, I don't know that it really made all that much sense.
You know, my take on all of this, and I'm sure we've encountered someone like this at some point in our lives, mainly professional lives, somebody who knows how to do the hard parts of the job, but keeps tripping over their shoelaces on the easy parts of the job. And I kind of feel like that's what the Browns think and what Monken may think of Shedeur. He has playmaking ability. He can do the hard parts of the job. We just got to get him to do the easy parts of the job. because if he can master the easy parts of the job, he'll be even better on the hard parts of the job.
What? Excuse me?
Man, you just don't have children. This makes perfect sense to me, okay?
Wait, hold on.
No.
You can't.
Yes, I can.
Then he just talked himself into a circle. He's like, he's good at the hard stuff, bad at the easy stuff. But when he gets better at the easy stuff, he'll be good at the hard stuff. We're just walking in a circle.
You've never seen White Man Can't Jump.
Actually, I just watched it on my plane when I was flying to my cruise, James. Oh, I have seen it.
All right, about time you got some culture. So didn't you understand? Because it's like when Gloria says, sometimes when you're right, you're actually wrong. And sometimes when you're wrong, you're actually right. So boom. And sometimes you just, it's a matter of opinion. So no, I definitely get what he's saying. He's basically saying he can handle the large stuff, but it's not the large stuff we're worried about. We're not so much worried about you saying, hey, can you recognize that they got six guys lined up on the left side and you need to shift protection? Yeah, we know you can do that. But can you do the subtle things like make sure that the tight end is on the line of scrimmage and he's not covered up by the wide receiver and you don't get a legal shift or
legal formation, yeah.
Thank you, legal formation. Little stuff like that, the processing. And that's what I'm saying. Yo, how much on your plate can you handle? Yes, it's cool that you can handle the big stuff, but it's not about just doing the big stuff once and then it's great. No. I need you to be proficient at all of it. And I think that's what he's saying, that, hey, yeah, you can handle the big stuff. If it's third and 12, we trust that you can go get us 15 yards. But can you convert out of third and 4? Can you convert out of third and 7? Can you convert in just getting us 4 yards more so we solidify field goal range and not take a sack and turn your back to the defense? And now we got to punt the ball away and we can't even get points out of it. So I understood it perfectly.
Listen, I think, can we at least agree he could have worded it a lot better? This is not an explanation on what he needs to do better. The easy stuff. I don't know that there's anything easy about being a quarterback. Like, I would argue that most of it probably falls into the difficult part. The difficult part is doing everything. Like, am I supposed to sit here and believe that the hard part for Lamar Jackson is playmaking? Like, no, that's the thing that comes easy to him.
No, but it would be decision-making. At some point, Lamar Jackson has earned the trust that when he decides to pull the ball down, it's a good decision, and B, he's not going to put himself in danger of getting hurt, injuring himself. He does, but I'm saying that he hasn't taken like a massive hit. Like we've seen like highlights of Michael Vick sometimes getting just completely blown up. Some other mobile guys who just moved around a little bit. Donovan McNabb get blown up. He's not taking that real just, you know, flatline pancake hit, you know, from like a Von Miller. Von Miller was able to just team up, you know. So I'm saying there's a level of trust that Lamar Jackson has built up because of his decision making over time that allowed you to feel comfortable with the fact that I can give you more. And I think that's where, from what some people saw last year, it didn't give them enough to trust that I can give you more, and then you're just going to be successful. Usually, if you give somebody more responsibility when they're not succeeding or even just meeting expectation, it doesn't really usually work out if you add more to their plate. So I get, if you want to say he could have phrased it differently, yes. But
I think he could have went into more detail.
That's a man, but it was a conceptual answer more than a detailed answer because it's just conceptually, I'm trying to figure out can he really handle the position? And I think that comes also with questions of he was coached by his dad his entire life outside of the last 18 months. So, I mean, there's questions about, you know, can you adapt to different styles, different techniques of coaching and stuff like that? And that all just becomes where you just have to be able to do it after a certain point. And that's not saying it's good or bad that you were placed in that one situation. But I, like I say, as a person with a parent, but a child, that answer made complete. I find myself saying that to my teenager all the time. Handle the little stuff because I have no problem and worry that you're going to handle the big stuff. I need you to handle these little mundane things that you don't think are important or fail to realize that they're more important than they are.
Listen, I understand where you're coming from on it. I guess the problem that I have with it is I don't really know where that set of the improvement comes from. Like, and I understand the operational side of it, which I don't think Shador was awful at last year, by the way. Like, pre-snap, making sure that the offense was lined up correctly. Obviously, they had issues they had issues when Joe Flacco was at quarterback at being lined up correctly. I just don't think Kevin knew what the hell he was doing, especially when it came to like motion in the offense. Like, that's not Kevin. He has no clue what he's doing in that aspect of the game. His offense was very stagnant. We've talked about it. It felt when it was good. And when it needed a little bit of flair, you were like, that man can't add flair to it. It's not working. So I think part of that is a bigger picture, but I still look at it. It's like, okay, so what's the hard stuff? Like, the difficult things that I'm pointing out is like, maybe this is what makes sense is the playmaking of Shador, right? He can go out, and that's what Mike Florio hinted at. The Isaiah Bond throw where he's backing up, rolling out to his right, and I mean, threw an absolute dime over the shoulder during the Raiders game on the deep ball where, you know, Miles was gasping and like, oh my God, I actually have a quarterback that can make that type of throw. But the easy stuff then would come down to on a play like that. Well, you have to know when you can make that play and when you can throw it away. I would make the argument that most of the quarterbacks that can make that play still don't know when to throw it away, and they're still great quarterbacks. Like, Josh Allen takes terrible sacks. Joe Burrow has taken terrible sacks. Patrick Mahomes, from time to time, will take god-awful sacks because he can make that type of play. Like, that is part of the learning part of the game. And again, you want to tell me the operational stuff? You want to tell me that type of thing? Sure, you can always improve on that. Like, you can always be better. I just don't think Shador was awful at that last year, and that's not to say he can't improve, but it can't be. The reasons he wasn't successful last year was not because they were picking up 5-yard penalties from time to time. They weren't successful last year because he was having games where he was throwing 3 interceptions. He was having more interceptions thrown than touchdowns thrown. And then obviously a lot of the supporting cast was not in his favor, which did not help. But there's a million different things. Shador has, as a member of the Cleveland Browns, held on to the ball too long, has not known when to throw it away, has dealt with footwork issues. Like, there are things he can work on. I'm not trying to sit here and paint him as anywhere near perfect. He's not anywhere close
to that.
No, go ahead,
Bob Ross, keep going.
I mean, happy little trees, right? Happy little trees. It'd be a lot easier if I could paint happy little trees than a Browns offense right now. That would be a much easier task. But I just, like, this is where the conversation gets so difficult for me, is because you tell me you want him to do the easy stuff. I just don't know what the easy stuff absolutely looks like that we're talking about, because a lot of the things we can point out are not things. Yes, they make you a better quarterback, but we're not the reason that we looked at 8 games or 7 games of Shador last year and went, maybe.
I think then if we wanted to get to the nitty gritty, we could do that, because we more intently watch these games play by play, moment by moment. So I think if I'm to guess what Florio is pointing out, is it's the disastrous moments that we've seen on the highlights where he's turning around, he's turning his back to the defense. I want to say it was in the Ravens game, which might be a little unfair, but there were a couple times where he's just a beat too slow and maybe trying to go for the bigger play, and maybe instead of just taking what the defense gives you so you can move along.
James, do you think that got better over the course of the year?
Yes. Yeah, yes.
I agree.
Yes. However, still not good enough. And I think we, where we are in our quarterback scenario, we don't want to hammer them but so tough, because then we just really have to really come to the grips of where we are in our current situation. So I think we want to try to have the best positive mindset we have when viewing these scenarios. While he's gotten better, I would argue, for as much clamoring as Shador fans have made and supporters have made, he wasn't at a level where he needed to be at that point last year. So I would say, you know, for people who aren't in the know like us, yeah, he has to process a lot faster and get the ball out of his hand. Even Monken said it, I think, a couple of days ago. He's got to just get the ball out of his hand. So I think if he did that, then he automatically avoids the 10-yard sack where he halfway tries to scramble, halfway tries to buy time. So I think if he does that, A, the big whoopsies don't get seen by the national guys. And then we get to see that, A, he's really making not just incremental progress, he's making a decent leap to fix the things he has to work on.
This is where I need to see the pads go on. I need to see Shador play football, because I'm hearing, you know, great progress from Shador, and you have a trouble visualizing it. Like, again, I agree with most of the things you're saying. There were moments where Shador, like, again, we're not making sure Shador to be a perfect quarterback, okay? And I don't think a quarterback is perfect, and I think Shador is far from it. I think it's highly likely you're drafting a quarterback next year. But it's also such a difficult time to decipher last year of seeing, like, I can look at it and say Shador had to be better last year. Everything around Shador had to be better last year, too. Like, there were a lot of moments where I think he put himself in a bad spot, a lot of moments where I'm watching Shador hang onto the ball, and people going, see, look, at this is the problem, this is the problem. And I go, okay, let's take a look at the all 22, and there are exactly zero people open for the entirety of the play. Okay.
They throw it out of bounds.
James, it'd be 4th and 10. Every single play, we'd be throwing it out of the bounds. He'd be 0 for 40 after the end of the game. It would just be like, all right, 3 and out, and Shador, the only person he's connected with is Miles Garrett and Kevin Stefanski, because they're the guys standing over there with their hands up. They're the only ones actually making catches with separation. Like, that's the part of it. Like, again, I'm not saying Shador can't get better at throwing the ball away. He can. You're right. Like, he held onto the ball too long at multiple points last year. But there were also so many points last year where everything around him failed him. And it doesn't make you look like any better of a quarterback. So I need it. This year I expect to be better. It's why I hammer these 17 games of Shador that I want to see. Because I need to see what you look like when everything around you is better. Are you still holding onto the ball too long? If the protection is better this year, and I expect it to be, I'll be able to make that judgment. It'll be easier to come away with that conclusion. It was just so difficult to do it last year. 216-474-0092. What does progress from year one look like for Shador Sanders? Am I right? Was Mike Florio off the rails? Or you agree with James? Do I just not have a child and I don't understand the hard things, the easy things? Plus, coming up here, as we get to 840, we're going to talk more on the Cavs, because the Giannis decision seems to be coming sooner rather than later. Doesn't sound like Cleveland's all that involved in it. At least that's the perception. We'll talk about the ramifications of that right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Coming up here in about 17 minutes, you're going to get to Get a Grip, as we always do at 9 o'clock. But we're going to take a little bit of time here to talk about the Cavs. Obviously, a lot going on surrounding the NBA draft's just a little bit of ways now. Giannis expected to be dealt right around that time of the draft. And, well, quite frankly, sounds like the Cavs are farther out on that conversation than they are in on that conversation. And for some people, that's a really big positive. For people like me, who thinks that's probably the correct decision for the Cavs to move, to hold on Devin Mobley, not sacrifice your entire future right now, that's a good thing. But also, the ramifications of where Giannis might end up could also be a bad thing in this. Obviously, there's a lot happening around Miami, which I don't think really impacts you much whatsoever. We'll get into that here coming up in just a few minutes, really, what happens if he goes to Miami. But it's more so about one other team that he can go to. And Bill Simmons on the Bill Simmons podcast was talking about one team he thought was initially out, but now sounds to be maybe back in.
I thought Boston was out of this. I know Boston was out of this. And I was wondering if they were playing possum or not. I think they were playing a little possum. I think they ran on Giannis. So I'm not recanting what I said before. I don't really know the reasons for it. Maybe they felt like Miami's offer is an offer they could beat. Maybe they want to drive the price of Miami's offer up and they don't actually have interest in him. But as I said over and over again, Giannis is pushing for Miami or Boston. Those are the two locations, and really wants to end up in Boston. Because it would have the best chance to win a title. And I think Boston is not ruling out the idea, is my intel. And in general, I'm prepared for anything of Boston now.
So here's where my problem comes in, right? If we're talking about Giannis actually going to Boston, and we've talked about the potential of this, likely it would involve Jaylen Brown probably in some capacity, and kind of sounds like Boston's really, potentially over the idea of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown might be over the idea of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown together. That might be more of what it is than Boston actually over with it. But, Jaylen Brown basically pulled out the Darius Garland comment of he found his joy again playing basketball while Jason Tatum was recovering from a torn Achilles, because he actually got to be the top player on the team. And by the way, Boston looked good while he did. But, okay, so, and take out the opportunity, because I think there's a very high likelihood. Like, I struggle to think why Milwaukee would actually want Jaylen Brown. Not because he's not a great player, but that's a team clearly set up for a rebuild. Jaylen Brown's 29 years old. I don't know that's the player you're really seeking after. Like, it feels a little too similar to the Giannis timeline is what they're at, because Giannis is about 31. Jaylen Brown's significantly more healthy than Giannis is, but you're probably still looking at an older player that it doesn't make sense to center a trade around this kind of like. And I mean, we go back to Milwaukee talking about wanting to trade Giannis at the deadline, and the two players they were interested in were VJ Edgecombe and Evan Mobley, both of those guys pre-25. So like, seems like they're really searching for draft capital and young players out of this deal. But let's say some way, somehow, let's say Milwaukee's interested in Jaylen Brown, and this ends up being the equivalent of a one-for-one swap in terms of players being made in there, being traded away in the deal. This, to me, is where I look at the Cavs.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When legacy automation starts impacting visibility and downtime, it may be time to consider modernization. Graybar's automation specialists work alongside your team to help you identify risks and map out realistic upgrade paths without unnecessary disruptions. Get started with a free health check of your operations and see what's possible. Yep, Graybar does that.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now, it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball, home or away, every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. according to Ookla speed test, based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Really? Wait, are you...
Yep, it's Keenan.
...able to finish in person without starting the process over?
Really? Your info stays with you every step of the way.
Cool. Enjoy.
It's Keenan Thompson. Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really?
Then I just go... You might as well just, I mean, kind of blow it up. Like, that's really what you're looking at for me this year. If Giannis goes to Boston, what are you competing for?
I got you. I know what you were looking for. Just ring the alarm. Let's just go ahead and ring the alarm. Because if the Boston Celtics get Giannis and pair him with Tatum, a competent front office and historical franchise that, you know, can build teams. So you would believe that they could go out and get cheaper guys who want to take a discount.
Hey, you want to double down on that, James? Because Joe Mazzulla is widely considered to be like a, if not the top coach in the NBA, like a top three coach in the NBA who can develop young and cheap talent on top of it, and has showed it year and year again, and will now have Giannis to work with on top of the young talent. And they were already really good this year without him.
I don't believe the Cavs are going to run back this exact full roster. However, I do think we're going to start the season with what looks to be a very similar team to what we saw it end with. And I think probably majority of the changes we'll see will be probably a mid-season or early season trade, just because the gel thing and chemistry thing does matter. However, I think the pieces that they could trade, I think other teams know that I can get that guy in December. I can get him in January. Like, he, if you want to give me Max Strus, I mean, I'm in no rush for getting him off of your hands and help you out. Like, we'll be fine. Or if a sign and trade comes about for maybe Dean Wade, but I don't really see a bunch of moves this summer just because of the pieces that could be moved. Nobody wants to trade Donovan. You're not trading James. And I don't think you want to trade Mobley. As much as he's going to be your best piece to get something back, you probably don't want to do that and be back. And you're just 1 year away from potential disaster again and living like we did after LeBron left.
Again, but this is kind of the disaster that I'm talking about right now, as I'm looking at it. And it's like, could you trade Jared Allen? And we talked about this a little bit, I think, earlier on in the week, but I don't know what Jared Allen's really like. The value on him, he's a solid center, but we talk about it like, oh, maybe you could get Jared Allen for Trey Murphy. You're not getting Jared Allen for Trey Murphy. It's not happening. Like, you have to add more to that deal. And I don't think the Pelicans are trying to break up the value of Trey Murphy. I think they're going for, you want a guy like Trey Murphy, hand me a star back, right? Like, go give me a player like, Donovan's obviously not the right equivalent of this, but somebody closer to, oh, you want a star guard off of your hands that I can pair with Zion? Okay, I'll take more something like that rather than I'm just going to trade away Trey Murphy for what is the equivalent of, I get a center to help me out and like Max Strus. Like, that doesn't really help me get any closer to winning the championship. But you get put into this era now where, okay, let's say the Cavs run it back, because I agree with you on that front. I don't think they're making any big move. Everything points to wanting to keep Giannis. They've pointed to prioritizing Dean Wade over Keon Ellis, which is a move that thinks you're still ready to compete and want to roll back with a lot of this roster right now. What is your, ceiling to floor right now? Obviously, ceiling, we would talk about being number one if this team can get it together. But of the teams who have been better than you in the last couple of years, and the teams who are going to be healthy and at full strength, if not stronger next year, Boston with Giannis certainly rises to the top of that list. New York is on the precipice of winning an NBA Finals, and nothing dramatic probably is happening to that roster. Indiana's coming back stronger next year with Tyrese Halliburton back. They added Ivica Zubac. That team is also set up with a decent draft pick, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, they missed out on the draft pick because the NBA draft lottery.
It was supposed to be 5-8, and if it fell anywhere between 5 and 8, they were going to get it, and it didn't fall between 5 and 8. So yeah, they took a gamble. I don't know why they just didn't keep their pick in the first place and then make the move later, because, I mean, hey, if it does end up in like a top 6 lottery pick and was one of the best drafts in the last 15 years, but hey.
Oh, yeah, shucks.
What do we know? Oh, we're just talking on the radio all the time.
Yeah, so they are without that, but okay, that's still a really solid team, though. Like, it has a lot of the pieces. They maintained much of their roster from the championship year. Obviously, they've lost, like, Miles Turner, but, again, they replaced it with Ivica Zubac. I think they're going to be okay. And if they go on any sort of run like they did 2 years ago, we watched what happened when that team matched up with the Cavs, and a very similar look Cavs, not the same look. But you have those teams. I point to a Detroit team that I think is going to attempt to get better this year, this offseason, right? Try to add more, pair more with Cade. The Raptors just push you to 7 games. That team's young and probably only getting better and will be healthier the next time you see them, more likely. Orlando just fired their coach. Like, and I'm not saying you're necessarily below all of these teams, but you're watching what was just the most open Eastern Conference, the easiest pathway you could have possibly gone through, and you fell short, and the Eastern Conference just got a whole lot tougher. Like, they are prepared to be more difficult than they were this year, and you're basically banking on the power of friendship, hope, and dreams to take you to the next level. Like, if Giannis goes to Boston, the East is between New York, Boston, and maybe Indiana if they go on that type of run like they did a year ago. And just because Indiana has tended to own the Knicks over the last couple of years, I'll throw Indiana into the mix. The Cavs seem slated to be right where they've been for the entirety of this, which is about the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference with almost no pathway to get past it. Like, I would legitimately rather reset, go back to this team being young, try to acquire what you can rather than compete. Yes, panic button is fully out. I am fully in alarm mode. I'm fully in panic mode. If Giannis goes to Boston, I already don't have a high belief in this team to get any better without making dramatic changes. All of the dramatic changes that are on the table, I don't really like. You just seem to have backed yourself into a corner with the James Harden trade, as we saw it play out in the playoffs, and now you have very little pathway to actually improve, not a ton of pathway to be great in the future. It feels like the time where the organization should probably look at itself and go, what is the ceiling of this team, and can we get a player, right? Because your pathway in my eyes to actually, you know, re-getting into that conversation is about 1 year of LeBron, and whether or not you can get more perceived value out of Jared Allen in another piece than I think you can.
I think you get 2 years out of LeBron. I think I let go of this 1 year thing. But when I look at this team and everything you just laid out, and I just think about the teams that were in the playoffs, right? If I go team by team, I can't think of anything that the Cavs do that I would be like, oh, well, at least if they do that, they should be okay.
Yes.
And before, you know, when we had JB Bickerstaff for all of his flaws, you knew day after day, game after game, season after season, one thing that they was going to do is play defense. And at worst, coming to worst, it keeps you in the game. You may not be able to pull them out, but you'll be in the contention to close it out in the late moments.
James, I just don't know where the ceiling goes for this team on offense. Like, I just watched Donovan Mitchell turning 30, lose a step in his game in the playoffs when clearly the weight of the season had weighed down on him. James Harden not be as effective as he had been in previous years, and I don't think being a very effective piece in the playoffs. They both had great moments. Like, Donovan's, you go look at his playoff stats, it's comparable to almost every other year he's played. Like, by the time it ended this year, it really wasn't horrible, but we all saw the difference in impact. Again, you're talking about a roster where your two top players, the two players that you have to rely on the most, are aging and getting worse. And we are talking about Donovan as a combo guard. Every year that he plays in the NBA at this point, he is a worse player. He is slower, he is older, and the year wears on him. I just don't know where the ceiling goes. Like, yes, it might be a dramatic, I might be over the top with it, but I would legitimately consider blowing this entire thing up.
I don't know about blowing this up, man. I don't want to go back to it. You don't remember 2001. You don't remember.
But this is where I go GM on it, though. And I think about it from the organizational perspective and not the fan. Because as a fan, yes, I'd absolutely rather finish fourth in the Eastern Conference than watch this team go and fight for a lottery pick. But as a GM, if I'm not winning anything, if I don't think I have a chance at an NBA championship, then I've built all of this and I'm burning time for nothing.
It's easier to get to the championship from the fourth seat than in the play-in. But then in that scenario, it sounds like then you would be okay with getting rid of Mobley, because at least you take the 1 year gamble, and if it doesn't work out, then you're just going to tear it down next season anyway.
But that's the thing, is if Giannis is here, I don't think it even propels them into being the best team in the, like, you are on paper the best team in the East. I don't think it guarantees you coming out of the East with what we've seen out of this team.
I don't think you're the best team in the East because you're not as deep as the Knicks.
So there you go. Like, and I can't even count on Giannis to necessarily stay healthy. And I get, like, that's a counter argument to Boston, but I can't count on it. Like, there's not an individual move I feel great about. If there was, I'd say go all in for it. Make the entire push that you can. I just don't see it. 216-474-0092. Should the Giannis sweepstakes impact the Cavs as decision makers? Plus, we got Get a Grip coming your way here at 9 o'clock. It's Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina DiAnaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now, it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball, home or away. Every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile. It's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Really? Wait, are you...
Yep, it's Keenan.
Able to finish in person without starting the process over?
Really? Your info stays with you every step of the way.
Cool. Enjoy.
It's Keenan Thompson. Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really?
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.